Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th of July, Anno Domini 2013, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues.
Happy Moon Day.
Happy Moon Day. You might want to explain to everybody what Moon Day is.
July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong first set foot on the moon.
And I know exactly where I was when that happened.
Yep. I remember Walter Cronkite on the news all the time. But of course,
Walter Cronkite.
Yep. You know, Neil Armstrong was the first man to set foot on the moon. Buzz Aldrin was the first man to take a leak on the moon.
Thank you for sharing that.
Well, because people in interviews since then, they always ask him about what was the first thing you did. And while there was some time in the schedule, he's standing at the top of the ladder while Neil is working his way down the ladder to get onto the surface. And he's, all right, might as well.
Might as well. He's right there after all.
Yep.
And it was in the infamous astronaut diapers.
Yep.
So we all know what those are. Before I get to the news, I do want to acknowledge that somehow Steve and Dave both have weaseled their way back on the air. As you remember, a couple of weeks ago, I kicked them both off.
I'm still trying to remember how to run the board. Well, you know, no, it's no big deal, but it's nice to get back into the groove of it. I kind of missed you guys, but, you know, I had other commitments that I had to handle.
And that's perfectly understandable.
Yeah,
I will say Michael Oden did a great job. He was excellent.
I kept wanting to ask him if he knew Thor.
No, he's Odin, not Odin. Big difference. And, of course, Brian was terrific.
Yep.
So that was kind of nice. But let me get to the news. Legal drama is nothing new for Apple, Samsung, eBooks, App Store trademarks, etc., etc., etc. But the company has probably never seen anything like the 50-page complaint that AboveTheLaw.com pointed out this week. Plaintiff and attorney Chris Sevier filed the document against Apple in a U.S. District Court in Nashville, Tennessee last month. Sevier's beef with Cupertino boils down to a simple fact. It sells machines that allows people to view porn. From his introduction, and I left all the grammar as it is, the plaintiff loves Apple. The plaintiff believes in Apple as a company and knows that it has good intent. Since its inception, Apple has always been a pro-family company. Apple has always been an entity that is concerned with the welfare of our nation's children. I'll just finish reading this without editorial comment. With furthering pro-American values, there is no reason for Apple, a private company, to overly support pornography online, explicit sexual content, which has led to the proliferation of arousal addiction, sex trafficking, prostitution, and countless numbers of destroyed lives. The plaintiff respectfully demand that Apple sell all of its devices, demand that Apple sell all of its devices on safe mode with software preset to filter out pornographic content. If the purchaser of Apple's products is over 18, Apple should allow the buyer to take additional step to acquire a password from Apple in order to remove the filter to access constitutionally protected indecent content. If the buyer is under 18, Apple should not provide the password. Sevier is seeking damage. I don't know, we'll go back to real English. Sevier is seeking damages and injunction relief against Apple because it makes products that can display porn, or as the rest of us call it, the internet. So Sevier legally requested that Apple enable a porn filtering safe mode by default on all its devices. His complaint notes that if Apple agreed to sell its devices on safe mode before the trial, the plaintiff will terminate this litigation. The 50 pages contains a plethora of eyebrow-raising gems. Sevier claims his porn addiction started because of a simple typo in Safari. He was trying to access Facebook.com. I won't tell you what the typo was. He alleges Apple's porn offering led to unfair competition between his wife and porn stars, which ultimately caused a deteriorating relationship. Sevier's electronic group called Ghost Wars even made a supporting YouTube video referenced in the complaint that summarizes the issues in the lawsuit as it relates to rewiring, voyeurism products liability, and systemic problems that are the direct result of our collective arrogance to not do something about an problem area. Shockingly,
he's a lawyer, not a grammatician.
Damn it, Jim. I'm a lawyer, not a grammarian. Shockingly, Apple has yet to respond to this filing. Although they will, because legally they kind of have to.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what that ends up being. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, and that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is as follows. Have you ever seen porn on your Apple device? And the choices are, of course, only accidentally, once under adult supervision, and wait, there's porn on the intertubes? So far, we have an inability to click a button. There it is. We've got 28 votes. Not surprisingly, 79% of you are shocked, I say, to find that there is porn on the internet. So what's the deal here? Should Apple block porn? Why? Or why not? So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
That reminds me a lot of the lawsuits in the early days of AOL, because mm-hmm. they were billing themselves yep. as a family-friendly service.
Right.
And they you know, famously had a list of banned words that you couldn't type in chat rooms.
Which in and of itself got them into massive amounts
right.
of trouble.
Well, they added the word breast to the banned list, and then all the breast cancer forums got yeah. flagged, and so they stopped doing that.
Yeah, there's
so they
really
got sued over that. But then the next week, they let yep. an anti-Semitic message go through
yep.
by not censoring, and got sued over that. So yep. do you censor, do you not censor? You're screwed both ways.
Well, that's because they announced themselves as family friendly.
Right.
At no point has the internet
right.
self-described as family friendly.
And I don't believe Apple has ever made that comment about the desktop computers. They have said that about the iDevices,
right.
where they don't let porn on unless it sneaks by. But you can use Safari on the iDevice to get to porn if you want to, because it's the web.
Well, and that's just it. And what yeah. he's saying is that somehow, accidentally, he slipped and fell into porn.
Right. And a typo usually means you miss a letter. The A and the U are nowhere near each other when you're typing yeah. Facebook.
Oh, is that what you think it was? Okay, yeah. that's good. Well,
I had to, which I guess I can be thankful in one respect, in that child porn.
Yeah.
Yep. At least.
Well, that I'm completely against.
Well, no, yeah. You don't have to tell me. I had to testify.
Yep.
Because this individual was trying to convince the court systems that no, he didn't know how that got there. And this I can say, you know, I'll stick my life on it. There is no child porn, thank goodness,
yep.
that will solicit people.
Right.
You have to go after them. So when you sit there and tell me, oh, no, it just showed up here on my computer. Sorry, I was born at night, just not last night. And thank goodness that stuff isn't going out and around. Because as you guys know, I've turned in, three people?
Yep.
Turned in three people, which have gotten taken care of. And one I had to do a deposition at. Because I have zero tolerance for it.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And these kids are, you know, scarred for life. Adult porn, you know, again, you got to use your own judgment.
It's
if that's your sickness, then, you know, whatever.
Right.
I read a FAQ on some site once about, you know, what about these girls that look young? And what's his name? The Girls Gone Wild guy and all the college girls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's probably 23 years old, looks young, and has six kids by six different guys. So yeah. You're not going to want to see that anyway.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's like the thing with Glee. Here's these all these high school students who are in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's something.
What was his name? Matthew Broderick always looked young until he hit like 50, and now he looks like he's 30.
Yeah. Yes.
So some of these actors can
Daniel
play
Radcliffe
teenagers.
Still looks 11.
Yeah.
Until you see him in Equus.
Ralph Macchio. He was like 27 when he did The Karate Kid at 16.
Yep.
And he's been popping up in TV shows lately. What was he in? He was in How I Met Your Mother. They had this whole thing about Barney wanted to meet the hero from Karate Kid, so they got him Ralph Macchio. No, the other guy was the hero. Cobra Kai. So then he was there too in clown makeup.
Speaking of actors who are at best B actors, I actually got to watch Sharknado.
Oh, did you hear about that? After it aired the first time, so many celebrities started tweeting about it. Damon Lindelof, who wrote Star Trek and Lost, said, "I'm writing the sequel right now. It'll be done before the movie." And then all these other actors, Olivia Wilde and Elizabeth Banks, started saying, "Oh, I want to be in it. And so Sci-Fi has aired it again, and they've already commissioned the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you see Sharknado coming up.
Well, and they've said they're probably going to call it Sharknado 2, but they are requesting taglines.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this time it's for real. You know, that wouldn't be the tagline, you know, the tagline. So that should be kind of fun. Listen, let's forget all that nonsense and go to the phones, where Ed has patiently been hanging on all the way from Ithaca, New York. Welcome, Ed, what's your question?
Thank you. I've been waiting patiently and enjoying every moment of it.
Thank you so much.
I have a 10-year-old daughter who wants a Kindle or a Nook, partly for reading and partly for doing kid games. And I don't have a reader myself. I haven't used them. And so I'm looking for advice on what would be useful for her.
One of the problems is that Barnes & Noble has all but given up on the Nook.
Yeah.
They are trying to find a buyer for it. I got my wife a Nook last year under the assumption she was going to read on it, and she wants more apps and internet stuff, so I think I'm going to have to end up getting her an iPad.
Yeah. now it's 10. Is the iPad or the mini?
Yeah, the 8-inch version or the 10-inch version. Yeah. So that tends to be a big question as well. The Nook has inexpensive versions that are great for reading, and then they have the Kindle and the Nook. But I think we're almost going to discount the Nook completely now.
Yeah.
The Kindle has inexpensive versions that are great for reading. They have the Kindle tablets that you can also watch movies on. And they are pretty much geared to getting content through Amazon services. If you go with something like an iPad, you can get all the stuff from the Apple iTunes stores. And you can get the Amazon app for the Amazon stuff, and the Nook app, and the Google app, and what was the fourth bookstore? Oh, Apple's own iBookstore app. So that's one of the nice things about the iPad is you can get to all the bookstores from all the devices.
And similarly, the Nexus 7. Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nexus 7 is the best of both worlds. Nick got me hooked on that.
He did.
And again, another thing you,
well, the big
you
thing,
got
it's
me
my
into.
Fault. It's yep. It isn't my fault. I got more stuff for you. Here's the thing, Ed. Either the iPad or the Nexus 7 are exceptional products. The iPad mini. Because if you're going to read it as a book, you don't want the huge screen because it's too much to carry around.
She's a young kid, so she doesn't need the big screen for old eyes.
How much was the mini?
The mini starts at $329, but it's more than a book reader. It's also everything else that a tablet.
Well, that's like the Nexus 7. I got the, you know, in 32 gig.
$250.
It's $250, 32 gig. You can get all the apps and plenty of books on it. And that's what I love about mine because at night I take it upstairs. Yep. And I can start reading, and I love that it just falls, you know, goes into sleep mode after a couple minutes if I'm not turning pages.
So, Ed, our recommendation would be either, and it's your choice whether you go iPad or Nexus 7.
Well, the problem with both of those is that they're more money than she can afford.
Yeah, if you go for just a straight Kindle reader for $79, then that's a really great book reader, and you can take hundreds and hundreds of books with it.
But be aware that it's not going to be all the other things that people want.
It's maybe an early, just a book reader.
Maybe an early Christmas or birthday gift.
Yeah, if you kick in half and she kicks in half, you
well,
can go
we're
with...
already doing
oh, okay.
on those lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would discount the Nook just because of the uncertainties about...
Mm-hmm. Handwriting's on the wall there.
Right, it's hard to know what to say about it, except that you shouldn't jump.
I got a Jelly Bean card for my wife's Nook, and so now she can run Pure Android on it and get all to the Android stuff.
So there's a possibility that it'll just stop functioning...
Not that it will stop functioning. It's just there won't be any.
You won't be able to get anything. New
won't be any updates from Barnes and Noble. You can get some. The Nook is based on Android, but it isn't. You don't get to the Android layer. They did release a Google Play app, so you can get some of the Google Android stuff on it, but not all of it. So it pretty much was tied into Barnes and Noble's book services. Which is one of the biggest booksellers, physical bookstores in the world. I thought that was a good bet a year ago.
Well, and it was, but they didn't. There's a whole other internal story on that.
Yep.
But I would suggest if you're just looking for a reader, get that Kindle reader and you're on your way.
Okay.
All right. We got to take a break back in just a couple of moments. Dave, Steve, Nick, you. 21 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, Jazz 90.1.
Complex until 8 p.m. right here on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Love that tune.
And we have Carl from Pottstown, PA on the line. Hiya, Carl. What's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Peachy, you?
Oh, pretty good. I just got a new computer.
Good for you. What'd you get?
Windows 7 Professional desktop version.
Nice.
You were still able to find a Windows 7?
Oh, yeah. A lot of manufacturers aren't crucifying people with Windows 8, that's for sure.
Well, one nice thing I had gotten with this computer is I got two restore disks, and I realized today some computers don't come with any.
Physical disks?
One restore disk to restore to Windows 7 Professional, and another restore disk to restore to Windows 8. And they told me if I wanted a Windows 8 instead of 7, I could just put in the Windows 8 disk, and it would update it to Windows 8.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know what they usually call that, though, going to Windows 7? A downgrade.
You mean when they call Windows 7 the downgrade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Windows 8's the upgrade.
Yeah. It's from opposite land, bizarre world.
I wasn't sure what it came with because the salesman said it comes with Windows 8. On the side of the box, it said it comes with Windows 8. But then a printout they gave me said that Windows 7 is installed. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know what was going to come up until I actually plugged it in. As it turns out, Windows 7 came up, and I was happy about that.
Yeah.
There have been times in the past during these transitions where the first thing it asks you is, do you want XP or do you want Vista? And I remember a lot of machines came with that.
Yeah.
So you pick at startup. But then whatever you pick, it deletes the other one, so you can't go back. So it's nice they gave you physical disks. Can we ask what brand it was? Was it a major brand?
Yes, I went to Micro Center, and their brand name is PowerSpec. So that's what I got.
Nice.
Cool.
So it's an independent dealer. It's not a mega brand.
Right, so they can do that stuff, yeah.
Yep.
Like a Dell or Gateway or that.
HD. That's really nice. That's actually kind of nifty because one of the things that Microsoft did at least for a while was if you got 8, you also got the right to downgrade to 7.
Right.
So if they put both in, it's not illegal.
Yep.
And if they just happen to have 7 on it, so you could go back up to 8, and that's perfectly legal.
And since you just bought 7, you get the free upgrade to 8, so they give it to you both ways.
Yeah,
I'd rather have the money. Don't give me 8. Give me the money. Pay me not to use your system.
Well, but so he wins.
Yeah.
You know,
he
got Windows 7, so he's a happy man. Plus, he has the Windows 8 CD in case he needs a coaster while he's working.
I wonder when they're actually going to come out with the newer version of 8.
8.1.
Or go right to 9. Or go to 9. Go to 9 and get the heck away from.
Yeah. Well, they're talking about 8.1. And what that will do is give you back the desktop. The start menu.
Yeah, he's got to do something to stop the bleeding because nobody wants the original version of 8.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it stinks. Hello? We've talked about this.
I can't argue this. So what's the deal here, Carl?
Oh, I have a question. I understand Windows 7 Professional comes with an XP compatibility mode. And I was just wondering how I use that. Do I have to do anything to activate it or bring it up? Or
will it
just run on its own?
What it'll do, Carl, is quite often, if say you've got older applications and they rely on, say, XP, when the icon is, say, on the desktop, you can right-click on it, and one of the tabs there is going to be compatibility mode. And you can select that. And from the compatibility mode, you could back it on down, I think, to Windows 98. Because there's some of them that still need that old DOS shell to work. And you can just say it. So what it's doing is it's lying to the operating system. So when the operating system, you know, the software goes out to ask, well, what operating system? And if you've selected, say, Windows XP, it'll lie to it and say, I'm XP. Back in the day, we used
to... And it'll give it whatever pieces and parts of XP it needs to work.
Remember in the day we used to have to add each one?
Yep.
They added that feature in, so you just, in compatibility mode, can sit there and select it and say run it in that mode.
But you do have to select the icon and the first time, right, before you run it, you select the icon, right-click, choose compatibility mode, and then you can pick which compatibility mode you want, and from then on it will remember. And of course you can change it again later.
Yep.
And usually what happens is you just try to launch the program regularly and it will crash or say, the irony is I need Windows XP or later. I'm running later. and then you can tell that app to go down into the compatibility mode.
Right. Is that semi clear? Oh.
Yeah, I think I understand that very well. Thank you very much.
There you go. Have fun.
And I've posted a link with a Microsoft video on how to use that service.
Yeah. It's actually a very clever idea. And
previous Windows had it for free. Now, with Windows 7, it only came in Pro.
Right. Right. Well, and this is, of course, as we've said many times, this is Microsoft's main problem. How do you differentiate all the really undifferentiatable versions of Windows?
Yep.
And the way you do it is you just leave some stuff out of the lower-end versions. All right, our next caller is Frank from Greece, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's up?
Hello, Nick. I've got a problem with this application I'm running called Dropbox.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
So I have a Quicken file that I use, and I use it to update my laptop from my desktop. And all of a sudden, I'm missing a good four months of data. And I couldn't understand what it was. I couldn't get it back. And when I opened the laptop, all of a sudden, that's gone too. It's the same thing. And it's weird because I have backups on separate, like a hard drive.
Yeah.
And it's gone there too. I mean, I back up monthly to that thing, and 4 months of data are gone on that. And I don't understand what's going on. So what I did, I says, all right, threw up my hands, and I said, okay, I'll start a new account. And so I start that, and I went on vacation. I come back, and that whole thing is gone. I can't find it on my computer anywhere. So I'm flummoxed by the thing. I don't know whether to go buy a new version of Quicken, if the program's contaminated, or what's going on.
I would say try creating a Quicken file outside of your Dropbox and see what happens.
Well, that's what I did. I threw away Dropbox, and it still blew up on me.
Oh, then it has nothing to do with Dropbox. It's something in that Quicken version. You may want to check for updates. What version of Quicken are you running?
Oh, it's a 2007, I think, so it's quite old. It's
quite old. There might have been updates for it, you know, Service Pack or Release 6 or 7 or whatever they had for that.
Thinking back a ways, Quicken did have a number of problems with file corruption in early versions, and so updating Quicken, or in fact using, isn't there an online version of Quicken now?
I don't know.
I think there is.
Yeah.
That might even be better. But in either case, the problem is more likely to be the 2007 version of Quicken than it is to be anything to do with Dropbox, particularly if you've taken Dropbox out of the equation, and it's still a problem.
Yeah,
I use Quicken through my Dropbox all the time, and it works fine. There is something weird in the way a Macintosh file structure has different content in it with its resources and its data forks. And so when I look at the Quicken file on a non-Apple or on the website, it looks crazy, but it works fine between between my Macs.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, so I would go to the Quicken website. I'm looking for the direct link to their update list to make sure you're running the latest patch of 2007, or they do have an online version for free. You just have to trust into it with all your financial information, or you can purchase the new Quicken 2013, which is the current version.
Oh, is that new for the Mac, the 2013?
They don't call it 2013, it's just Quicken Essentials. In fact, that was a big issue in the Mac community. When they released Quicken Essentials in 2010, it didn't do everything that Quicken did. It doesn't do stocks and money markets. It just does basically checkbook, which, okay, it's called Quicken Essentials. But they do have the problem was that the Quicken 2007 is not compatible with Lion, which changed the whole architecture of how Mac software works.
So yeah,
they did write a Lion compatible version of Quicken 2007, and I think it's only $10. So it looks exactly like your Quicken 2007, but it works on a new Mac with newer software.
Okay, that'd be worth getting, I guess. So yeah. Essentials is what I'm looking for, I guess.
Yeah, Essentials is the full new Quicken. That's a checkbook program. It does have some reporting tools, but it doesn't do the stock and money market tracking.
And for those, you need the online version.
Or you use the Quicken 2007 for Lion.
Okay, great. I'll give that a whirl. And thank you.
Yep, good luck.
Okay.
As time goes on, it's interesting to watch companies change their software. Not always sure why, except I guess they want to move people to a new paradigm. And the web-based software is currently the big new paradigm. So it's an odd thing. Microsoft is doing it. We have a story a little bit later that I might probably not get to.
Didn't they kill Microsoft Money? No one could compete with Quicken, so most of the other personal finance programs have been killed. There is one for the Mac called iBank that I hear really good things about in the App Store.
They're also now trying to move people to Office 365, so it's all web-based.
Yep.
Apple is doing that now with iWorks on iCloud.
Big question there is whether it's going to become free. It appears that that developers that are getting into it can get to it for free without have purchased iWork ahead of time. Because they used to have their iWork website, but you had to have already purchased the iWork program on your computer. So it would make sense for Apple to make that free to compete against Microsoft Online Docs and Google Online Docs, but they haven't officially announced anything
yet. Well, because it's still in beta.
It's in beta, and it's developer only at the moment.
Right. I actually have a developer connection. I've seen it work. It's lovely.
What were you guys talking about?
iWorks on iCloud.
Oh, okay.
It's Apple's iWorks program, which is a word processor, a spreadsheet, and a presentation package.
Sort of like the Google.
That are designed, they're originally designed for, I guess they were originally designed for the iPad.
No, originally for Mac.
Okay.
As a replacement to their AppleWorks integrated program with interoperability with Microsoft Office. We tended to see Microsoft Office went to business people and AppleWorks went to home users, and then iWork went to home users. But that Microsoft Office catch 22 that most people get Office because most people have Office, because businesses would get Office, so people got Office at home because that's what they were used to at work, if they didn't even take their copy from work home.
So it's now it's going to be available web-based. Right now, it seems to be. Now they're $10 a piece, which is not a lot of money, but you're still paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
20 on the desktop and 15 on the iDevice.
Oh, education pricing. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. So it's $60 to get
all
three.
Which is cheaper than $140 for Microsoft.
Yes. But you're still paying for it.
Yep.
Whereas the one from Google and a couple of other places, you just get them for free.
Right. Google Docs or LibreOffice.
So the question will become, how much more useful is it?
Yep.
For that $60, is it worth it? And yep. That's, of course, an individual question. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Charlie from Penfield on the line. Charlie, what's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. It's nice to hear all of you there at once. It's cool to have you all back.
It's frightening, isn't it?
I know you guys aren't attorneys. You can't give legal advice or any of that. So I'm
looking
for a little bit of input as to what you think this might be about. I've been a long-time fan of YouTube, and I have my own channel and all that. And I finally decided to try to make a little bit of money through the partnership program that they have. And I'm one of these people who reads through entire contracts when they're put in front of me. So I read through their whole contract, and I signed up and did all that stuff. And I can't understand for the life of me, you know, when people are partnering, because there's going to be ads and stuff oftentimes at before their videos and stuff.
Right.
So the copyright thing is what I'm asking you about. I see people constantly using copyrighted music in the background while having ads before the videos, all kinds of songs, lots and lots of music. It even states in one part of the agreement that you can't even do karaoke-type stuff because of copyright violations, which I thought you could, but apparently you can't. But regardless, there's people who take other people's videos. There's people who take shots from TV, live concerts, music, and on and on and on, and they're monetizing their videos. And I just wanted any insights you guys thought you might have or opinions about it, because how are they getting away with it for years?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take the answer off the phone, and thanks for your help.
Sure, our pleasure. Well, there's a couple of things here, Charlie, that he's hung up. There are a couple of things here that are at play.
Did we tell him to?
No, he said he wanted to take his answer off the air.
Okay.
Here's the thing. We start with the fair use policy. Let's get that out of the way from the beginning. Fair use doesn't mean what 99% of America thinks it means. It specifically relates to educational use or critical use. So if you are saying, all right, I watched Sharknado, and let me tell you what I thought of it, particularly this scene of Ian Ziering fighting a shark.
And then you show the clip.
And then you can show the clip. That is fair use. Or let's talk about the physics that would be required to pull a 2,500-pound shark out of the water, carry it over land, and drop it on someone, as happens in this clip from Sharknado. Now I can show the
Seriously?
Clip. Yeah. Well, but I'm telling you, if you're doing it for critical reasons to critique, or for educational reasons, it's okay.
And there's parody in there usually gets allowed, too.
Parody is also allowed. So if you're doing a parody on Sharknado and you use a quick clip from it or whatever, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a parody of what's her name is Friday, whatever the hell, Black, her last name is Black. That's fine if you're doing a tribute or you're just singing the song.
Mm-hmm.
That's illegal.
Gotcha.
Unless you have purchased the right to copy this material. So when someone is using it on their partnered page, it had better be for educational or parody or critique reasons. Otherwise, fair use doesn't come into play.
And even if it is for one of those reasons, it will. I hear this all the time on Twit, which is a news show critiquing things. They try to play a YouTube video, and their Twit video gets taken down for DMCA.
Right.
For violating the copyright of showing that internal clip.
Right.
So then they submit a request to Google. So Google has, especially on YouTube, Google has algorithms that look for copyrighted material. And if it finds it, it takes it down, and then you as whoever uploaded that video have to prove that you have the right to use that. The other thing that Google has available to it is that if you put a song in your video, Google can put an ad for that song and a link to buy that song. And that gives you that will give you the right to play that song, and then you get a tiny fraction of the cut of that.
Which is likely what's happening to the stuff you're talking about, Charlie. So if you are a partner and you use a song, then Google has already retained the right for you to do that as a partner, and they get money from that, and you get a tiny piece of that money.
We hear reports and read reports all the time about someone took pictures of a birthday party at a movie theater. And YouTube took it down because there's a movie playing in the background.
Right.
That you don't have permission to take a picture of.
Right.
Right.
Or, yeah, music in the background of whatever restaurant you're at.
Right.
A lot of people don't realize this. The restaurant has to pay a fee to play music in the restaurant. It is illegal for them to just turn a radio on. They have to pay a royalty fee to play music, much like a radio station. And there are services. Muzak is probably the most well-known service.
Right. When you're listening to that stuff in the elevator, that's been paid for.
Yep.
None of that is free.
Oh, we had that going on at our store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the regular, and they play a good radio station. Somebody for a couple days changed the station.
Yeah. And you probably don't have the right to do that other station.
But to put you to sleep, it was like, oh, no, I'd rather have no radio.
Yeah, but that's the deal, Charlie. Either because they are partners, then there is the right to do that because Google's already paid for that right, or it had better be under fair use. And now I'll start getting all kinds of people complaining, that's not what fair use is. Yeah, actually it is. Not only have I actually read the fair use doctrine, but I've gone to seminars about it done by lawyers. So I'm closer to right than you are.
And a lot of people say that it's okay if you only use 8 seconds of the clip.
No, it isn't.
There's no time thing like that. Yeah.
Right.
So you can't show the whole movie and said, wow, that movie was crap. And that's your critique? No, you can't do that either.
No, you can only show a limited amount of time, but it still better be. That's right. It's not like you can say, and now let's take a look at the way conditions were in the deep South. We're going to show the entire Roots miniseries here in class. No, that's still illegal.
Unless you get permission.
You can use a clip if you're, right, unless you get permission. You can use a clip and then talk about the clip. But you can't show the whole thing and say, wow, weren't conditions horrible back then? It just isn't the way it works.
Yep. I remember that I just forgot something.
CRS?
Yeah.
Or you gone up to Kraft?
I was going to mention this, and I'm still looking up the air show. I think it's the Canadian Snowbirds that are at the Toronto Air Show.
I'll check my email.
Not the U.S. ones.
I told a friend last night, we were talking about CRS.
Yep.
And then I said, because he was really forget. I says, oh, wow, you've graduated to Kraft.
Yeah, and then you told him what I meant.
He just about choked.
Yep.
I like that one. I says, I can't take credit for it. Nick gave me that one.
Yep.
Yep. A few years ago, there was a case about a website, Kung Fu Cinema, I think it was, that did reviews of a lot of the Hong Kong Kung Fu movies.
Right.
He had no clips on his own website. They just talked about the movies. But he gave a link to a website in Hong Kong where you could buy the movie. Miramax sued him successfully because Miramax has an exclusive contract for U.S. distribution. And that got everyone up in arms because the guy was not selling anything himself. He was linking to a place where you could sell something, which then violated Miramax's exclusive contract.
Right.
But if you bought something from Hong Kong and had it shipped, the company that sold it to you was violating Miramax's contract.
Yeah, not these guys with the link.
Yeah. So that upset a lot of people and potentially set some dangerous legal precedent.
Right.
You're linking to a site that violated somebody's copyright. You got taken down.
Right. Right. Dave, do we have time to go to the phones? Well, we can get the question in.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Linda from Rochester. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi, everyone. Love your show.
Thanks.
I have Frontier Secure for a broadband connection.
Sure.
And last Tuesday, I was working on the computer and just lost the connection from Frontier. I called them. They reset the modem and all that, but they couldn't get me back up onto the internet. They couldn't figure out what was wrong, so I just said, I'll shut it down. I'll come back in the morning and see.
Sure.
In the next morning, I could get onto Chrome and into Internet Explorer fine, but I also use AOL. And I've gone through all the steps that AOL has told me to, and it just does not recognize the connection. It recognizes the modem, but I keep getting an error saying that the computer cannot get an Internet connection. But yet I can get on through Chrome and Internet Explorer.
So are you telling AOL to dial a connection?
No. No, it's broadband.
Right. But if you accidentally told AOL to dial a connection, it's going to look for a modem when there isn't one.
And could you read
that? Yeah, no, because I even reinstalled the software, which the AOL software, which is what they said to do. And so I went in and I set it up for a broadband connection. So it's not trying to dial.
Okay, can you read the exact error message?
Yeah, I get a bunch. It just says, attempt one, broadband. The computer could not get an internet connection. Error AC3000. And then there's some numbers after that. And then the other error box just says it could not get a connection, internet connection.
Okay, but
see, that sounds like it's trying to dial a modem.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Hmm.
It does. Well, I'll tell you what. What is it, AC3000?
Yes.
Yeah, we're finding that on the AOL help sites.
Yeah.
And of course, they don't help me unless you pay them to help. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, right.
So you want to go into your connection setup and make sure that it is set to broadband, not just named broadband.
Yeah, because I didn't set it up. Like I say, it's a brand new install, so I didn't set it up to do any dial-up. And I do have it set up for broadband. The only thing I don't know is it recommends setting it up to say automatically reconnect me and ignore interruptions.
Are you using Avast?
No. No, I'm using Frontier Secure. But I don't have any other.
Yeah, but what Frontier doesn't make any software. They just sell you somebody else's. So do you know what antivirus it is?
No, it's through them, and it just runs through Frontier Secure.
Right.
It usually says, okay, it's F-Secure.
I've been using AOL in Frontier for the last couple of years, and if I did have a problem, all I'd have to do is go into AOL, and it would find the connection automatically, and it's just not doing that.
It may be that your firewall is blocking AOL's access. There should be an icon to go into the F-Secure firewall. Maybe called Frontier Secure.
Yeah, I detect it too.
Yeah, F Secure is a completely different company that just happens to start with F.
Okay.
You could try turning off the F Secure firewall temporarily and see if AOL works.
Okay, I did try to turn off Windows firewall, but I didn't try turning the F Secure. I'll try that and see.
If that doesn't work, try rebooting into safe mode.
With networking.
Okay. So when you restart the machine, you tap that F8 button until you see the menu. Pick safe mode with networking, which should then run without any of the firewalls or anything else. So you really don't want to run in that regularly. But try that and see if, in fact, you can get in that way. And that will, again, tell you whether or not the problem is directly related to the firewall or whatever.
Okay. All right. I'll give it a try.
But the easiest thing to do first is to disable the firewall in F-Secure, and then you have to figure out how to tell it AOL is okay to let through.
Okay. I'll take a look at that. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, that's one of the problems that we're seeing a lot these days is that the antivirus and firewall and anti-malware programs are getting a little too zealous sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're doing a great job, but they're doing too much job.
Yep.
And we get a lot of people who are finding, maybe like Linda is doing, that something that worked, there's an update, or when they reset the thing, it ends up being... it ends up being not the the same settings that they had the last time.
And the virus and malware writers are getting sneakier, so the antivirus guys have to be more aggressive.
Right, I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong. Yeah. In fact, they're doing everything right. The problem is, can they get it to happen? All right, listen, that music tells me we're going to take a quick break. This show is only half over, so you could accidentally find yourself listening to another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and we still manage to be, without even trying, sound bites right here on the Truly Great. And let us never forget that it is truly member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Vic from around the Quaid on the line. Welcome, Vic. What's up?
I have a couple of questions, guys. The first one is, on my wife's computer, she's got the pay version of Malwarebytes, and for the last two or three days, we have not been able to update it. I don't remember the error message we get, but on my Windows 7 desktop, no problem. You think maybe just uninstalling it and reinstalling it might do it?
The first thing I would do is dance the security tango
to
make sure you haven't been caught by something.
Okay.
A root kit.
Something maybe blocking the update.
Right. It wouldn't necessarily have to be a virus, but that's the first thing I'd look for.
Okay.
And then if that doesn't do it, if you don't find something and clear it out, then I would, because Malwarebytes isn't an antivirus program.
Right, spyware.
It's specifically for spyware. You need to also be running an antivirus program.
Right, we have that, but she's also running the Super Anti-Spyware, the pay version also.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still not an antivirus.
Right. But you can get rootkits in there. You know, they're constantly changing the rootkits, and... As we have said from day one when we started this show, it's a game of leapfrog. Viruses were always the big thing back in the day, and we were always saying, you know, the minute they come out with one cure, the guys find another cure. So it's a leapfrog thing. So even though you have the paid versions of all, you know, say all three, it's doing due diligence and trying to keep up with it, but that doesn't mean you're always going to stay ahead of it. You might still get bitten.
Right, and in particular, the two programs you have mentioned are not antivirus programs.
Right, they're spyware and malware.
So what is your antivirus program?
Microsoft Security Essentials.
Well, there you go.
One question. What antivirus program do you have?
That used to be pretty good, but it's gotten fairly weak in the last few versions as other antivirus programs have gotten.
Fairly, you know.
Now.
Microsoft, I'm sorry. Microsoft has the bad habit, and you both can't disagree with me, that they start something up, and if they don't like what's going on, if they're not making enough money on it, they bail.
Yes, that's
correct.
True.
That's what they're doing here.
They've certainly done that.
And they don't want to compete with their commercial partners that are making commercial antivirus programs. In fact, didn't Norton sue them when Windows Defender first came out?
Yep. So at any rate, here's the point, Vic. I would try any one of the free antivirus programs that are listed in the Tango. And at the very least, just run it. Whether or not you install it, run it and see if it finds something that Defender might have missed.
Okay, now should I uninstall the Microsoft or should just run it in conjunction with it?
Well, I would for the testing, I would disable the Microsoft one and run the other one.
Oh, okay.
Then you can decide whether you want to continue with a program that clearly isn't working perfectly or if you want to try one or the other.
Oh, you are being so gracious.
Of course, none of them work perfectly.
Right.
Okay, and the AVG is pretty good then, huh?
AVG or Avast?
I like both.
I like Avast. I've gotten to where...
Yeah, okay, I run Avast on most of my machines.
On tablets?
Yeah.
I finally broke down and bought the Kindle Fire HD 8.9. I use it for, the surfing and email and that kind of thing. Nothing spectacular. The reason I bought it, a friend of mine had one, and he said this. They had the number you call for any type of, problem with it, how to use it. And I did that when I first got it because I was totally negligent in how to use it. And it was great. Now, does the Google and the Apple do the same thing as far as, if you don't know anything about their tablets, do they have the
Apple
same
does.
Type of a customer service?
Well, they do. Yeah, they have numbers you can call.
They have numbers you can call. They have free seminars at the Apple stores. We have free seminars at our store as well.
Okay, I was just curious on that.
But Google, I don't know if there is a number at Google to call for anything.
Yeah, I don't think so.
but Google does have online support forums that often answer many questions.
Well, Dave, what do you do with your Nexus 7 then if you have a problem?
He calls us.
Oh, okay. Wait. There actually is a phone number.
Yeah, there is. That you can call, and if you have different issues, but to be honest with you, I've had my Nexus 7, and the thing's rock solid. I mean, knock on wood.
The new one just came out, I haven't looked at the specs yet, but they just announced it this week.
855-8
Nexus. Don't you dare. Don't you even dare, please. I just got my new phone, and I'm loving that. You get me in one.
I hear the HTC One is better.
Stop. No. This phone that I have right now, the Razer MX Max X, I love. It does 27 hours.
You talk about this every week. Let's go back and finish this guy's problem first.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Here's the thing. There is a number, 855-83-NEXUS, for any of the Nexus devices. So you can certainly get the same kind of help from them.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much.
There you go.
Now
go ahead.
Now, that must mean that it's got to have a 64 gig out.
I have not.
Well, that's the next logical jump from 32 to 64 or 128.
Apple put out a 128 iPad.
So I bet you Nexus, still the same quad core processor, which is super fast.
It's ridiculously fast.
It is. I mean, I can't say enough good things about that. And again, the battery life is phenomenal.
Yeah, 2 days. I get 2 days on my battery easy.
And that's just standby or?
No, using it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I take mine into work. I bring it home. I'm shutting it down during the day at work when I take it to lunch. But in the evenings, it just goes into sleep mode. And I can usually let it go doing it that way for a good 4 or 5 days on a full charge.
Yeah, but I use it all the time. Mm. You get, according to the specs, 300 hours of standby time. 10 hours of web browsing or e-reading, and 8 hours of HD video playback.
That's on what, the 7?
The 7.
Any word there on newer version?
It's the Nexus 10 is the next big one. They now have a 10-inch version, 16 gig and 32 gig.
Yeah, it's
Who was it? Somebody came out with like a 22-inch tablet. And so people started jokingly calling it the tablet because it's a table.
Yeah. Well, even the 10-inch, that's still...
Well, that's what the iPad is. 10 inches is pretty good size, but not overly big. It's about the size of a regular folio paper folio you might carry.
The 5x7 is fine
for
me.
It's book size. It's paperback size. And it's exactly it fits in my pocket.
You can hold it with one hand.
Yeah, it's light enough.
I balance mine on my chest when I'm reading.
Sure.
Lay down in bed.
You don't actually mean your chest. You mean your stomach.
Sometimes my chest. If I take my glasses off, it's my chest.
Getting older is the son of a gun, ain't it?
My daughter, she was younger, was addicted to the Disney Channel. They had a whole series of shows by obviously the same set of people. And they had something they called the pair computers and the pair this and that. And they had somebody say, oh, let me get my pair pad. And they pull out this thing that's like gigantic. It had to be 24 inches diagonally. And of course, you only see the back of it with the pair in the back. And she says, let me add that up on my calculator app. Boom, boom, boom. She starts pounding on the thing. It's actually very funny. I found that very funny. But yeah, there's a whole set of new stuff apparently that's just come out. I haven't had a chance to look at the specs yet.
In The Simpsons, it's the Mapple, and there's a bite taken out of both sides of the Apple logo. On Futurama, it's the My Phone.
Yeah.
And you shove it in your eye. And that's how it takes pictures. and Mom had this great line about, you know, we'll release the MyPhone 2.0 and all these mindless sheep will just line up to buy it. Because the beginning of the episode were all these mindless people lining up to buy it. And by the end of the show, Fry finally got his. How did it word it? It was, you know, a limited production run, exclusive use. There's not very many of them. I'll take one. The guy reaches behind the curtain and there's billions of them in a giant pile. And the clerk grabs one and shoves it in Fry's eye and starts taking pictures. Futurama got canceled again.
Again,
yeah. And so Professor Farnsworth had another snarky comment about the guys who canceled us the first time, but the new guys brought us back, and now the new guys have canceled us again. And
Well, it all has to do with ratings, I'm afraid. I don't know that the tech specs are a whole lot different for the new Nexus 7. I think there's a phone on the back as well.
Some people, there have been some interesting requests for a rumor that Nexus has the 5-inch Galaxy Tab, which is a phone. It's a 5-inch tablet with a telephone chip in it.
Right.
And we've had people buy the 8-inch iPad Mini and use it with Skype and FaceTime as a telephone, even though there's actually no actual telephone chip in it. And there have been people asking for an iPad Mini with a telephone chip in it. The joke has always been you're going to hold this giant thing up to your head, but with headsets and Bluetooth earpieces.
I've been saying that forever. If there was a phone chip in my Nexus 7, I'd be done.
So you put the Google Voice app on it, and it becomes your telephone.
Well, and particularly if they come out with a watch screen, so I can just look at it and see, oh, it's such and so calling. I'll get that one.
Dick Tracy.
It's so and so calling. I won't. Right, exactly.
Dick Tracy.
And they're talking about doing that sort of thing too. So the form factor of a phone no longer needs to be phone-like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And particularly with Bluetooth, which was originally known as a PAN, a personal area network. The idea being that you would have Bluetooth-enabled devices that you could wear whatever on your body, because it was, you know, that close a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do that. Now, Bluetooth, unless you're doing 2.1, it's not at all secure. But in terms of...
But we're up to 4 now. Most devices are doing at least 3, if not 4.
Right.
Yeah.
But even, you know, I have a set of headphones that are just headphones. There's no microphone in them. So they're only useful for music. So if somebody wants to eavesdrop on my music, I don't really have a problem with that.
Yeah.
At Mobile World Congress, LG and Nokia both showed off phones with curved glass screens, so they fit on your head a little nicer. But most people keep the phone in their pocket.
Right.
So curved in your pocket doesn't quite fit.
Right.
Oh, I did try out that one feature that you showed me. It's once you got it up, just to swipe.
That's Google Now.
Yeah, that works cool.
Isn't that great?
That is wild.
I use that everything, both on my phone and I don't look things up anymore. I let Google look them up for me.
Oh yeah, and the speech recognition is great.
It is great. It learns as you go along, mm-hmm. and it gets as you're going. It's not horrible in noisy environments. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good. Particularly, that depends on the device you have. For example, right. My phone has two microphones, so it does noise canceling.
Yeah. Well, with mine in the car, right. I can sit there and do a text message without taking my hands off the wheel, and it types it perfectly. Yeah. You know, you can sit there and say the sentence, period, space, then continue the
comma,
next sentence.
Exclamation point.
Yeah, it understands all my enunciations, and then I can just hit send. Apple. I just say send. I don't have to take my hands off the wheel. I don't have to look off of anything else. It just sends it.
Apple calls that eyes free on their Siri products, and they've been integrating with some cars that we've talked about hands free for years now. But people still pick up their phone, push the button to answer it, so it's not quite hands free. So eyes free in the next generation of devices and cars, so you don't even have to look at your phone. You can answer it, have it read you important texts or whatnot.
Right.
Charlie just called and wanted us to kind of expand on the voice recognition. Back in the day, it was horrible. Nowadays, on most phones, you can talk.
You had to talk really slow.
Yeah, talk.
Enunciate every syllable.
And it does a phenomenal job. Yeah. I mean, it has made leaps, you know, over the old technology that it doesn't misspell words. As a matter of fact, it did come up with one that I was doing. And then it made a suggestion. I go, yes. And it corrected mm-hmm. it. And then I sent. And then I just have to say, send. And it knows enough to send it.
Yep. Yeah. There's a website that has collected them all. It's a fairly large site. For example, you can say, remind me to blah, 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 at blah, blah, blah time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can say note to self and then talk about the note. Say, set alarm 2:30. You can say, wake me up at 7:30 a.m. You can say call and then a contact or a number. You can text somebody. You can send email. You can set a schedule. You can listen to a song. And that's just the slightest thing. What's the weather? You can say. So there's all kinds of stuff. Listen, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave, Steve, me, Nick, you. 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And if 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Steve from Greece on the line. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, guys. I finally talked, after all these years, a friend of mine into putting security on her Wi-Fi.
Nice.
She's got a Aeris TM 602G modem.
Yeah.
And a Linksys WRT54G router. She's running Windows XP. And every time I try get all the way to the end where it says save the settings, I went 128-bit encryption. Every time I get all the way to the end, click save, it says you need to reboot the router. You need it. Couldn't save. I get the old chart of death.
Now, what is the Linksys router you're talking about now, right?
Yep.
And what's the model number again?
The WRT54G.
That's a very popular brand.
Yeah, I know.
Which encryption are you using?
128.
Yeah, but which one? WEP, WEAS, WPA.
I don't recall which one I checked.
Yeah, you want to make sure you don't use WEP. Because even at 128, that can be cracked in a few minutes with a wristwatch.
Yeah, right.
You want to use at least WPA, if not WPA2. If she has had this router for a while, and I'm guessing she has because it's a G, she may not have run any of the firmware updates from Linksys to update it and fix bugs. So you might want to do that as well. There's also a third party open source router firmware that you can replace the Linksys software with. And it gives you much better control and much more control over it. There's what is it? It's a tomato router. There's two of them, actually.
There's a couple. The thing is, I think Steve is absolutely right. One of the problems that you likely have is that if this thing hasn't been updated, many of the early Linksys routers did not have the ability, I guess is the way to put this, to do the higher encryption rates correctly. And there were updates that fixed that.
And it may even be that that she doesn't even have WPA. It may only have WEP on it.
Right.
So the firmware update should fix that as well.
Can you give me the names of some of those third-party firmwares?
Well, the first thing you ought to try is updating the router that you have.
Okay.
One of the choices on the... on the system itself will be to update. If you log in as administrator,
right,
you can update to the latest firmware.
But you have to download the firmware yourself from Cisco, or actually Linksys, because Belkin just bought Linksys from Cisco.
Right.
So you go to the Linksys website, and you can download the firmware update for your specific router. You also need to look at the bottom of the router and see what version of the router it is. Because sometimes 54G is not enough. You have to know if it's version 2, 3, 4, whatever.
Okay.
So, yeah, once you've done that, you can download...
Well, up to version 8.2 is the latest firmware for that router.
You can download the 8.2 firmware, upload it into the router. That'll reboot, and that may fix a lot of your problems right there.
That's okay. Okay, sounds good.
So that's the place to start. If you then... want to actually replace
replace the router. DDWRT is a big one, right. Specifically for that Linksys WRT brand, because it was so popular and so easy to
and
upgrade.
And Steve will link, we'll put that up, but the link is dd-wrt.com.
dd-wrt.com.
Right, that's a Linux-based alternative open source firmware that works with that router. There are a couple of others that are available. Tomato, as Steve said, is one. But he'll put up a list of some of those up there for you.
Okay. And one more quick question, if I can.
Go.
Do you guys have... I'm looking for good OCR software, and I can't find reviews anywhere that are useful.
OCR is sort of a lost art these days. Oftentimes when you buy a scanner, it comes with its own OCR software.
Yeah, I've got that. I was just trying to get something better than what I got with
the scanner. Yeah, Reed Iris is one of the more well-known ones.
What is it? I'm sorry?
Reed Iris. At irislink.com. In fact, many scanners come with a light version of Reed Iris, and you can pay to upgrade to the bigger version. There's also OmniPage is one of the other big OCR programs.
Tesseract.
Not familiar with that one.
There's one called Tesseract software. Tesseract OCR. TESSERACT. It's an open source thing from HP and the University of Las Vegas, actually, back in 2005, and they're and they're migrating, as of April 2013, they're migrating it to Google's code software, code.google.com.
But sometimes now with the voice recognition, it's just easier to read it right into the system.
Yeah. But if you've got a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But again, we can put up a list of some of the things.
OmniPage is $500, so that's a pro version.
Yeah, you don't really. That's nice. There are some open source ones that are pretty good, and again, they're free. If they worked, great. If they don't, great.
Yeah.
Right.
Reed Iris is $129 for their Pro, 129 for Pro version and 600 for corporate version.
Wow.
Yeah. OCR Opus is free. Tesseract is free. OmniPage and Read Iris and Presto OCR and Abbey Fine Reader. Abbey, that's right.
That's another one I've seen bundled with scanners.
Microsoft actually has Microsoft Document Imaging, which was included in 2007, but I don't know if it still is anymore. OneNote let you OCR imported images if you have OneNote. There's a thing called Scanner, S-C-A-N-R. It's a website. I don't know if they're still up. You could send... Yeah, I don't think they're still up anymore.
Xerox used to make one called TextBridge, but that's been long gone.
Yeah, anyway, those are the ones Those are the ones to try.
All right, thank you very much, gentlemen. I got some router work to do.
Yep. I guess you do.
All right, thank
and
you.
And sort of bottom line would also be just get rid of the G router and buy a new N router. Or you can, now the AC routers are coming out, the next standard.
Right.
Theoretically capable of 1.3 gigabit per second.
Theoretically capable, yeah.
It does have a neat option where if you have two AC devices, it can create a high power beam between the two. So you get faster than you would with a normal sphere of radio. Apple started shipping AC routers, and some of their computers have AC in it now as well. We need that's going to have to start saying the whole 802.11.ac because AC means too many other things now. Right. So we jumped from B to N. No, I'm sorry, no B to G,
D, then to N,
then to N, and now to AC. So theoretically, there was an MNLP, QRST, WXYZ, right. And an AAABAC.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well.
So all those other standards didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and a lot of them don't. Is this...
That's the way he pronounced
okay,
it.
Okay, St. James.
Yep.
St. John. Maybe it's St. John. Our next caller is St. James from Rochester, New York. Welcome.
How you doing, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Not too bad. I listen to you every week, and... I wanted to get a little input on this uninstaller. I remember you guys talking about that because I've been doing my, on my own. You know, just go to and remove programs.
Yeah, no. The product that we talk about is a product called Revo. Revo Uninstaller does a far better job at cleaning out the registry and the programs than does Windows. Because Windows, all it does is in the registry turn off the one bit, and it leaves the registry very big. But the leaner you can keep the registry, the faster your machine is going to run also.
Right. So it's called Revo, R-E-V-O?
Yep.
Revo. I'm on your site. I can get that from the on-site, or I can just Google it.
There is a link to it on our website, but it's back a few weeks because we've talked about it a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's RevoOneInstaller.com.
You got to add a global search field to the main Soundbites website. Put that on your list of things to do.
Yeah, exactly.
In your free time. But yes, you can just go to RevoUninstaller.com, download it there, install it, and use that program to get rid of it. Because like I say, it'll get rid of the folders and the files attributed to that. And then it will also clean out the registry. And the registry is the main thing that you want to really try to clean. Because here's the story. When you say install, we tell you install a program, uninstall it, and then reinstall it. Well, then there's three incidences of it if you use Windows Uninstaller.
Okay.
Whereas if you use Revo, it cleans all those out, and then when you do the reinstall, it will put it back in.
Now, the other thing to be aware of is that Revo, like so many other companies, has both a free and a pro version. So if you want the free version, make sure that's the one you download. Don't just download the first link you come to. That's never, ever going to be the free version.
That's right. Oftentimes, it's a trial of the pro version, and after a few weeks, it will say, please pay for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which is good if you want to do that, but make sure you know what you're doing.
Well, is the free version good? I mean, you can just keep the free version. That'll do the job.
The free version doesn't do as much as the pro version, mm-hmm. but what it does is it will scan for leftover junk after a regular install. It has a bunch of additional cleaning tools included, and, of course, there's free professional technical support, which is what you want. If you go the professional version, they have extended scanning for leftovers, real-time monitoring system changes, forced uninstall, things that you don't need right away.
Okay. Okay, guys, thank you very much, man. I love your show. Every week I listen to you guys.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
Okay.
Tell your friends, tell your enemies. That's what we want to hear.
Just tell everybody.
Just tell everybody. All right, I'm going to take a moment to read another thing. Oh, I love this one.
Uh-oh.
A 23-year-old Chinese woman has allegedly died from an electric shock when using Apple's iPhone 5 while it was being charged just after she got out of the shower, her family members claim. The older sister of alleged victim Ma Ailun took to Sina Weibo, China's popular Twitter-like social network, over the weekend to demand an explanation from Apple and urged people not to use their phones while charging them. A Sina Tech report said that Apple has issued a statement expressing condolences to Ma's family over the unfortunate incident and vowed to investigate the incident thoroughly. The company also said it would cooperate with authorities over the matter. Another report, this time from China Daily, said that the local police confirmed that Ma had died of electrocution, but have not concluded whether her phone played a part in causing the incident. Experts have noted that there is a risk in using any electrical device when it is being charged, according to a South China Morning Post report, be it a shaver or a phone. An expert in the report also cautioned that the exact circumstances of the incident are not clear, and it would not be suitable to jump to any conclusions at this stage. China is known for selling Apple products on the gray market, with the iPhone 5 landing in the country less than a week after Apple began selling it last year, and counterfeit iPhone 5 models had arrived by then, too. Ma's sister mentioned then on Weibo that the phone was bought last December and still under warranty, and the family has handed the phone over to authorities for investigation. Reports have said that Ma, a resident of the northwestern Chinese province of Xinjiang, had been a flight attendant at China Southern Airlines, though she recently quit her job. Ma's sister on Weibo mentioned she'd been due to get married on August 18th. Let's just pile pathos on top of pathos. So do you use your phone while you're in the shower? I mean, while it's charging? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
The other thing I keep seeing is the pictures you see sometimes of countries where they got a zillion things plugged into one outlet and the wires dangling everywhere.
Yep.
And okay, she was using an electric device while she was wet in the shower.
Well, and she wasn't in the shower. Yeah, she had just gotten out of the shower.
Yeah, I mean, and then they got to put all these warnings and everything else. Yeah. And it's like, really?
I remember.
I do answer my phone while it's charging sometimes.
Yeah.
It's charging right there next to me on the desk while I'm working. Somebody calls, I just pick it up and talk, even when it's plugged in. Everybody does it. It's probably stupid, but we all do it.
Yep. I remember reading a story about a ladder. Ladder companies tend to be sued a lot. People fall off. So when you ever look at a ladder, there's all these warning signs and labels and whatnot.
Don't stand on the top step.
Right. There's story I read about a farmer who was shingling his barn, and he set the ladder on top of the manure pile so he could get high enough to the roof. And the day got warm, and the manure got soft, and he fell off and hurt himself. He won the lawsuit because the ladder did not warn him about setting it on top of a manure pile. So now the ladder.
I could do a comment on that, but
now the ladder will say firm level surface.
Yeah, right. There's a guy who was robbing a school in California, fell through the skylight, sued and won because there was no sign that said "Do not stand on skylight." We're gonna take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Sound bites. Member supported. Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and Mark from Greece is on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a question about Revo. I was wondering when you go and use the program and it scans and it wants to know what level of scan you want. They're safe, moderate, and I don't remember what the other one is.
Advanced.
What do you guys usually use?
The bottom one is advanced, and I just recommend staying in the middle.
In the middle, the moderate?
Yes, moderate.
Okay, that's what I've been using.
Yeah. No, that's a safe one. Like I say, it does a good job. And without getting people into trouble, that's the safe one to use.
Now, if you're having really deep problems, you can try the higher one, but it sometimes asks you things you're not going to know how to answer.
Yeah, if you're an expert in computers, then the higher level.
Not.
yeah. So stick with the middle level at most.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. Actually, if you've done the middle level, from then on, you can probably, well, maybe not. Still stick with the middle level. It doesn't take that much longer, and it does a much more thorough job. So stick with the middle level. That's probably best.
Yeah, a lot of programs have that option where there's an easy, quick run, and then there's a full scan that might take all day. So that's why when we're running malware scans on our customers' computers, they always say, well, when's it going to be done? Depends on how much you have there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's an overnight scan several times.
Sorry, my crystal ball is out to be repaired.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. It's our favorite neighbor to the north, Dar from Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Dar. What's up?
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Okay. This thread you got going about liability.
Yeah.
This is an email we got from skepticalscalpel.blogspot.ca. And it's entitled, Who is at Fault if a Patient Doesn't Follow Up?
Yeah.
So the doc told him, look, you need catheterization. And he said, and the patient replied, I'll think about it. And the guy died, and he sued.
Yeah.
But this is not just fits right in.
Yep. Well, here's the thing. Here in America, you can sue anybody for anything. And particularly in America, the stupider the lawsuit, the more likely you are to win. Like I said, there was a guy who fell through a skylight at a school while he was attempting to rob the school, which he admitted, by the way. broke his leg and, you know, a couple of ribs or whatever, sued and won because there was no sign on the roof that said, don't stand on the skylight. Because unless there's a sign, what's the first thing you think? Oh, here's a piece of glass. I think I'll stand on it.
Yeah, really?
30 feet above the floor. Yeah. Yep. But yeah, Dar, you're absolutely right. You know, the only people who make money at these things are lawyers.
Yep.
Oh, it gets a little bit more serious now, one should say that.
Yeah.
Because these frivolous, crappy, stupid things get all the attention. And yet, if you read Stephen Lendman's article, S.J. Lendman, blogspot.ca, U.S. courts approve indefinite detention and torture. So that's okay. They can break into your studio, take you guys away. You can't phone family or a lawyer. Stick you anywhere they want.
If they claim you're a terrorist.
Right.
Yep.
But you don't even need that right now.
Well, that's true. The Patriot Act is. Well, they're talking about toning back or, in fact, repealing the Patriot Act.
No. Go to Stephen Len. Okay, the title of it, U.S. Courts Approve Indefinite Detention and Torture. No, the game's over. It's over. There's not going to be an appeal.
All right. We'll see.
It's sad to say. And yet, we can sue for any stupid thing we do. Like when I fell up the stairs at the supermarket, and what was it? Tibial plateau displacement. Thought the kneecap was busted, but in reality, the tibia was pushed back.
Right.
And a couple of guys at the store said, well, did you call management and sue? I said, why? It was my fault.
Well, that's because you're a reasonable and intelligent human being.
Well, okay, this is important, all right? Analyzed it. Took the elevator up a week later just to walk slowly down and see why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
The stairs were at an angle, you know, like arcing up.
Yeah.
Now, I got a scar on his stupid left leg that's 180 degrees on the inner side.
You're disfigured for life. You can get a big settlement out of that.
Not from tibial plateau. This is at the other end.
That was an old motorcycle accident 40 years ago.
Sure.
But here's the thing. There's nerve damage there. And when the body is tired, wherever you've got a damaged piece of body part, that's going to lag.
Right.
Just a bit. You need a buffer zone.
Yep.
So if you're going up the stairs and your right side has been injured, you hang on to the right handrail.
Right.
That was a painful lesson.
Yeah, but you learned it because you're a reasonable human being.
Oh, you don't know me very well.
Oops.
Hey, anybody who spends 300 hours on the roof in 30 years is not reasonable.
I do understand that.
Anyhow, cheers. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dar. Thanks for calling. Could that be louder,
that
please?
That came over pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, I heard that through the headphones. Dave is...
It's our boss.
Stop texting us in the middle of the show, because Dave keeps his phone at its absolute maximum because he's almost as deaf as I am.
At least he's listening.
He's always got to be...
Yeah, it's exactly what he is, too. All right, just for that, I'm going to read
like
another.
He said, at least he's listening.
Right. Oh, here's... I got to read this one if we don't have another call.
I thought I had it turned down.
The Vatican has taken another step in its efforts to embrace social media by offering indulgences to followers of Pope Francis' Twitter account, at Pontifex. Italian newspaper...
The other way is down.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
That's where... I got it. Down to nothing.
Well, clearly you need to set it on vibrate and then not put it on the desk so it goes.
I'm still learning with this one.
So Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera reports that the churches will reduce the time Catholics have to spend in purgatory if they follow the official Vatican events on TV, radio, and through social media. One such event is the Catholic World Youth Day, commencing in Rio de Janeiro on July 22nd. The Apostolic Penitentiary, a Vatican tribunal responsible for issues related to forgiveness of sins, will award the privilege to the faithful that follow the event using different forms of media. Pope Francis' followers are not immediately granted an indulgence for tracking the event, with the penitentiary noting that it would hinge on the users having previously confessed and being truly penitent and contrite. Indulgences are given out when a Catholic performs an action recommended by the Church. They're meant to encourage Catholics to lead a pious life, devoting themselves to charity, and generally treating others with a Christian spirit. What really counts is that the tweets the Pope sends from Brazil or the photos of the Catholic World Youth Day that go up on Pinterest, yes, the Pope has a Pinterest page, produce authentic spiritual fruit in the hearts of everyone, said Archbishop Claudio Maria Kelly, or Celli, I suppose, head of the Pontifical Council for Social Communication. Alongside its papal Twitter account, the Vatican offers an online news website and app, a Facebook page, and is currently planning to engage users on Pinterest. So do you think the Pope should be giving out indulgences for following him on Twitter? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I think that's a great way to get indulgences is to follow the Pope and actually, of course, have a penitent heart and confess your sins.
There's
and
also
boom, there you go.
An official app called the Pope app for iOS and Android.
Yep.
Where you can follow all the official Catholic
stuff.
They have live cams when there's any live streaming mass. It just on the way here, I was listening to a podcast where they were talking about it.
Yep, it's the Pope app.
It was a few months ago when they were picking a new Pope.
Yep. We followed the picking of the new Pope on Twitter and on live and through the Pope app, and it was pretty cool. They kept you up to the minute, so we knew ahead of time, or in time, when it was going on. We didn't even have to wait for a news item to tell us that. That's the beauty of apps in general, and so many people are beginning to put out everything in the app world these days. All right, that music tells me that you wasted 2 more hours of your life listening to this show. Luckily, if you're not that bright and you haven't learned your lesson, we can do it again next week. But we're done for this week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to everybody on the Google Plus Hangout and in the IRC chat. And we will be back next week to do this all over again. Don't forget, you'll be able to give us a call. You'll be able to see us online. There's the Ustream. I forgot to mention the Ustream. I apologize. We're on the Ustream as well. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Stay tuned. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And we're out. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.